He's an old, old friend of the programme's broadcast journalist, writer, public speaker, not the BCFM politics show every Friday out of Bristol, is a must listen. Welcome back to the programme, my friend Tony Gosling. Welcome back, Tony. How are you?
We're an endangered species. We're like the Dartford warbler. You know, you're not very easy to spot.
Yes, it's true. By the way, I foolishly... I'm not even going to say what I did there. We missed about the first 6 seconds of what you said, but I get exactly what you said. White males over 50, something along those lines. Stella Assange, Tony, asked followers and supporters of Julian Assange to track his flight in the Pacific. He's heading for the Mariana Islands. He's heading for Saipan, where he'll complete a deal that he's reached with the US authorities to avoid extradition and to go back to living his life. Do you think that Stella Assange is being overly cautious? Or is there a genuine possibility? Would it be something that the US intelligence agencies might have considered doing a negotiation in bad faith with Julian, saying, sign up, son, and we'll go our separate ways, when all along they intended to nab him and take him to the US mainland? What do you reckon?
Well, it's not something the intelligence agencies have considered. It's something that sitting senators have expressed on global television. We want to assassinate him. That's what they were saying when he was in the Ecuadorian embassy, Richie. So, yeah. Of course, there's nervousness about letting him out of British jurisdiction, where at least he's still alive. I mean, there were attempts to kill him there as well. At least the surveillance, in order to get the intelligence and the reconnaissance needed to get rid of Julian. That's a part of a separate court case in Spain. But, you know, what's interesting for me, this is a bit of a bombshell. It's been a mad day, actually, because I don't know if you know, it's George Orwell's birthday today.
I did not, no.
And he's Eric Blair, really, was his real name. And today I've been with a whole bunch of, I suppose you could just call us Orwell nerds, really, rather than just fans. But we've been in a graveyard in Sutton Courtney in Oxfordshire, where George is buried, and all sort of stood around his grave having little chit chats about surveillance and how right he was. And so for the news to come this morning about Julian Assange being released was almost, it was beautiful, actually, because there's a lot of people who are very concerned about Julian. Together there, and understanding how important he is as a sort of icon for freedom of speech, for investigative journalism, for revealing war crimes of our own governments, this sort of thing. So it was almost the perfect place, a perfect timing, you know, for us to be there.
Wow.
And chatting about all this.
Yeah.
Stuff.
I personally don't believe in coincidences anymore. That's a really, really interesting.
I think it's a coincidence, actually, because, you know, the reason, I mean, a lot of people will be saying, why? Why now? Well, it seems pretty obvious to me that the secret state, the diplomats behind the scenes, were absolutely adamant that they wanted this thing done before the change of government, and particularly not necessarily from Tory to Tory, but now it's clear a Labour government's about to take over. The last thing they want is for Starmer to take the credit for a deal like this. So they've managed to squeeze it through before the general election date, Richie. That's what I think.
You think so? And it would suit the Biden administration too, I suppose, equally. That might be right. What do you expect now from Julian Assange? I mean, I mentioned in the monologue, he's been in isolation 23 hours a day for 5 years. It must take a terrible toll on somebody's mental well-being. I have no doubt it's taken a toll on his. Will he settle down in Australia, get on with his life? Do you think he'll live outside the public eye? Or do you expect he might think about going back to work with WikiLeaks?
Well, look, let's just take a step back from all of this, because he's been being fed antidepressant drugs of some sort. Now, I did broach this topic with his lawyer, his barrister, Jen Robinson, and it was the one thing she said, look, I just don't want to talk about any of this stuff, because it's just so, it's not just because it's painful, it's also personal. So God knows what condition he's going to be in when he comes out, having been fed full of drugs. Do you know what? I was just looking the other day at an old tape of Dave Starbucks. I don't know if you ever came across or remember him from East Anglia. He's maybe still around. He used to do a whole sort of like cassette. He'd send out cassettes of conspiracies and all sorts of different subjects. And one of them was the Ian Huntley, Maxine Carr so-called murder of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman in 2002. This guy was the caretaker and it was his girlfriend. And these two kiddies in Soham, in Suffolk, were found dead. And he was then, there was a whole trial and everything to do with that. Now, in this Dave Starbuck interview, which I played on my show last week, an extract from it, it's an old, crackly old tape thing. He talks there about a court martial going on inside the RAF Lakenheath base, the American Air Force base, which the two girls' bodies were found very close to the outside perimeter fence of this base. And as part of all of that, I mean, the investigation that I did dug up a local paper that had also talked about a different date years afterwards, probably 10 years afterwards, another trial, that is to say a court-martial going on at RAF Lakenheath of a US airman. I mean, this is an American air base in Britain, basically. It's USAF, it should say, on the gate. But also for child sexual abuse and the gross abuse of children. And so it makes you think maybe there is something to this whole idea that Dave was talking about. But anyway, the point I'm trying to come round to, very roundabout way getting to.
Yeah, but you can't just leave that hanging in the air. Hang on. The murder of Jessica Chapman and Holly Wells is one of the biggest, one of the most shocking murders in the last 20, 25 years in this country. And it very, very few crimes received as much coverage. Maybe only the disappearance of Madeleine McCann. And the caretaker at the school, Ian Huntley, was blamed for it. And his girlfriend at the time, Maxine Carr, was that her name?
Yeah,
was alleged to have had knowledge of it and failed to tell the police. Didn't this guy Huntley admit doing it in court? Didn't he eventually admit
this? This is the point I'm trying to come round to. Yeah. I'm not sure about the details. And Julian Assange is about to admit to committing espionage. So there's all sorts of pressure that can be put on suspects to enter a plea that they've got no real belief in at all. So let's just leave that aside for a minute. But the point was that Huntley was visibly in a terrible state when he came to the court, and he'd been being kept in on probation, in custody. And also what Dave talks about is how massively dosed up with drugs he was while he was in there. And so this, this again is an indication of what may be going on with Julian. Is the idea is whilst he's in custody, we will just render him, incapable of being an investigative journalist, being a producer, being a web, editor, and then we can release him with no bother. And he was absolutely at the top of his game when he went into the embassy in the Ecuadorian embassy. But, we might see a different figure, a different character coming out. And I hope to God not. And I hope if he is on these antidepressants still, that they're able to wean him off them gently, because they're addictive, they're hideous addictive drugs. If anyone knows anyone who's managed to, be prescribed these things. So I don't know all the details about the drugs he's on, but I'm just hoping that he's, he is the Julian that went into the embassy still.
My take on him is a little bit different. And I'm delighted he's out of prison as well. And the video, I'll never forget seeing it, of the helicopter gunship murdering the civilians and the journalists. This was in the public interest. And I know WikiLeaks released lots of things that were in the public interest. I see him as, don't jump in and jump all over me. Wait till I finish before you do it. I see him as being probably a very interesting, very intelligent guy. Maybe a bit on the spectrum. I did see that documentary about him, which is very interesting. A computer geek, no doubt, who kind of fell into this by accident. I wouldn't regard Julian as a traditional journalist, to be honest. I wouldn't. But that's not to knock him in any way. He was a guy who made it possible for people to leak cables and information on the sort of scale that was previously unthinkable. And for that, that's a huge achievement. I wouldn't knock him for that. But I don't know, journalism, I'm very precious about that term because you're a journalist and I'm a journalist. There are 700,000 wannabe truthers in the independent media who call themselves journalists, and none of them are. I'm precious about it. I don't see him as a journalist. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm fascinated.
Well, look, first of
go ahead, jump in.
You've got to let me have a jump back there, because certainly he didn't just come out of nowhere. He's having met his father was an activist, an anti-nuclear peace activist in Australia, and very much so. And he was brought up in that tradition of their sort of version of CND and the social justice campaigns in Australia. I mean, I think he went to some sort of slightly potty commune. That doesn't mean to say he's potty, but that was just the things that, you know, that's the stuff that happened in the 1980s or whatever. This is the things, this is the norm. You know, these sorts of groups had the resources, the campaigners, to create communities where they felt that they could educate their kids properly and that they would actually get. And he's most definitely very much a social justice peace activist. And he was extremely articulate in talking about the role of the media in starting wars, in creating war, in justifying war, something that we're just not getting at all. In fact, we're getting absolutely the opposite, aren't we, from the mainstream press?
So absolutely. Yeah.
That's very important. Certainly was a journalist. He was filtering material. He was very, very careful about what was being released and what wasn't. He was going through it with a fine tooth comb, and he was saying, yes, this we can publish, this we can't, this we can, this we can't. A lot of the documents he went through and redacted personally, redacted loads of names out of it so that those people wouldn't be put at risk if they were agents in the material he was given. So he was really, he was more than a journalist. He was an editor. He was like the editor of, say, the Daily Telegraph or the Mail on Sunday. He was at the very top of that organization, making the most important decisions about how stuff was released, when, why. And also some of the most important stuff they released. I would just urge your listeners to go to Vault 7 and have a look at Vault 7.
Yeah,
this was, about 2015, 2016, yeah, something like that. And looking through that material will just blow you. It's all still on the WikiLeaks website. Will just blow your mind. The manuals of how to hack an aircraft, how to hack a car, how to hack into somebody's television.
Oh, that's what Vault 7 was.
Smart
that's
TV
right.
And listening to everything they're saying. Yeah, so this was the evidence behind all the kind of, you know, people like me who'd been considered crazy conspiracy, crazy conspiracy people who are paranoid about surveillance. No, the surveillance is very real. It's very, very much going on. And also, if your steering wheel starts to turn suddenly sideways as you're driving along a motorway at 80 miles an hour, Julian has shown you the evidence of how they do it.
His opponents today, again, don't jump in with 2 feet just yet.
Right,
people like Alistair Campbell. Good God, ooh. Right? Good God, right? People like Campbell and Haig, William Haig, they claimed today that he, in fact, wasn't careful and played fast and loose with the document dumps, and that it was The Guardian. I think I see Kevin Maguire on Good Morning Britain this morning. The Guardian did the real journalism and did the real trawling through the documents to try and redact and to protect people, that they didn't do that at WikiLeaks, and that they actually put people who were on operations or in the field, as it were, in grave danger. I'm just being devil's advocate. That's what they say. Mm. You said he did the due diligence. They're saying he didn't. Not always.
Yeah, he was working very closely with major newspapers in all the main countries in the Western world. And each of the countries had one or two partners that WikiLeaks were working with. And so this enabled them to do a lot more work. So journalists from these papers working with WikiLeaks together on investigations in pouring through vast amounts of leaked information, stuff which the public has paid for, but the public are not allowed to see. And these military people who were leaking it obviously were also prosecuted. I think for the Vault 7, the guy has had a retrial, and I can't remember his name now, has gone down for 7-8 years minimum, whatever. But the fact, the most shocking thing about what was going on with Julian is he was the recipient of this information. He wasn't the actual leaker of the information.
No, he wasn't, no.
And that was the key reason why I think journalists right across the world have been rooting for him, if they've got the guts to, which many of them don't, because he was in no way culpable or responsible for actually leaking that. He had no primary access to this information. He was just, what they were doing is shooting the messenger, classic, shooting the messenger and shoving him in the dungeon.
And sending a message. You are listening to the broadcast journalist Tony Gosling, former of the BBC, author of such excellent reads as The Traitors of Arnhem and The Siege of Heaven. Go to bilderberg.org and thisweek.org.uk. You know, when you see this Bookiegate scandal, you and I have known each other for 15 or more years. We love a good conspiracy theory, both of us. When you see scandals emerge, like close, very close confidants of the Prime Minister going and placing bets in a very, very haphazard way with no thought given to trying to avoid being detected, going and betting with major bookmakers, the election will be in July and then it all emerges. Do you get the feeling that there is a deliberate throwing of this election by the Tories or by the people who the Tories answer to? I've never known in my time a campaign to be as absolutely ridiculous as this Tory campaign. What do you think?
No, well, I mean, I was told by a representative from the Civil Servants Union 18 months, nearly 2 years ago, that the Tories didn't want to win this election. Now, that was pretty obvious when we saw the coup against Boris. Now, I'm no fan of Boris, but the public love him and they will vote for him. And he's a leader of the Tory party. They don't really care about Partygate, I don't think, many people. It's the press that gets so heated about it, aerated about it. So once they threw over Boris for this complete and utter idiot called Sunak from Goldman Sachs, who he just looks like an extremely... You imagine, you know, if you saw a used car on a forecourt and you thought, like, and this guy came out, Sunak, and tried to sell you it. You know what? I wouldn't be listening to him for more than about 15 seconds before I walked away.
Yes.
I'm not going anywhere near this idiot. You know, and he is... just a salesman. He could be selling vacuum cleaners, prunes, sausages, or whatever, but he's a salesman. He's not a politician, you know. Anyway, so that once they've replaced Boris with him, or was it Liz Truss the choice was or something, you know, complete numpties, then, well, you know, obviously they don't want to win. And the reason for that is very simple. It's that Sunak was to replace Boris because of Starmer. So they got rid of Corbyn. The only numpty they could get to lead the Tory party, sorry, the Labour Party, was Keir Starmer. And they realised that even with Boris in charge after Partygate, that the Tories would probably win against him because the personality of Starmer is vacuous and empty.
I don't
and
agree
so they
now.
Needed to have somebody who was worse. So
I agree.
And when it comes to these various details around the election you're talking about here, I don't think they give a damn, really. And this is what it indicates. I think was it Farage last week at Blackpool said they're steaming the light bulbs on the way out of Downing Street. You know, this is the attitude. It's like, well, we're not going to win. So, but what we will do is we'll grab as much for ourselves as possible on the way out. And they really don't care anymore about the public reputation. It does show you how our politics, and I think it's not going to take very long for the same sort of attitude to be with the new government. And Starmer is they just do not care about the public at all. They're just in it for themselves. And the idea that anyone wouldn't be to them is a bit peculiar and weird. Like somebody like Corbyn, you know, what are you talking about?
So
I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's deliberate. I just think it's a symptom of the fact that Sunak, anybody, by the way, who has spoken out as a human being around Sunak has been sacked and replaced by a nobody, one of the brand new MPs or something. So he's surrounded by utter sick, a bit like King Charles. Just sycophants, people who agree with him and sort of, you know, crawl to him. And so this is no way to run a country, and they deserve to be out. Of course they do.
Tony Gosling is our guest. I have a theory about Farage, that Farage is being created in the way that Donald Trump was created. They're following the Trump blueprint. Farage is saying all the right things, the things people want to hear. And he's so good at it that people forget the things that he wanted to do previously, like give genocidal maniac Tony Blair the running of vaccination programs in the UK, like all the free market capitalist nonsense that Farage was involved in all his life, like privatising the NHS. People don't want to know any of that because Farage is telling them what they want to hear. So this is how I see it. Do you think the Bilderbergers are going to create Trump-like characters in Farage to fill the vacuum when Labour introduces a bill, as I have no doubt it will, and it'll be supported by the Lib Dems and the Greens, and there'll be no Tories in the House of Commons to oppose it. They will bring in proportional representation, and in 5 years' time, or even 10 years' time, Nigel Farage will be Prime Minister. What do you reckon?
Well, I mean, he'd certainly make a good leader of the opposition. Now, I mean, I don't think he's, like, just created by the Bilderbergers.
Why not?
I think he's like, in a way, like Trump. They know how to press his buttons. I also know that people will vote for him, even though it might be a forlorn hope in the first past the post system, because the guy is actually a human being. He's extremely good stand-up comedian. I mean, it's like Trump. Trump is quite good, but Farage is top-notch. George Galloway, I don't think, much as I agree with Galloway, at least, you know, these are the two main personalities we've got, Galloway and Farage, who do speak from the heart. And whether you agree with what they really think, they're both very, very good at reacting to a situation that unscripted. You know, this is a key thing. Starmer is virtually useless without a script. I mean, he's got to have something to read in front of him on auto cue.
He's very wooden, yeah.
So both Galloway and Farage are extremely good in front of a crowd. Well worth going to see. And this may be one of the reasons why we don't see Rory Bremner or Mark Thomas or these, you know, comedians these days anymore, because of the fact that this is one good thing about crushing comedy, which is what's happened in Britain over the last 20 years, 30 years or so, is that these characters like Farage and Trump, and even Galloway to a certain extent, he can be quite witty, seem to be, you know, much, much bigger than they really are, because we don't have any genuine good stand-up comedy, maybe a little bit around, to compare it to on the mass media. But the big, big thing for me has been the massive amount of coverage Farage has got compared to Galloway. I mean, they're standing 150 or so candidates, I think it is, Galloway's
the Workers' Party, is that right? I didn't know that, right.
There's a lot That's of candidates impressive. They've managed to get in. And as a result, they're getting very few. At least that was the objective when the campaign switched off. I'm not quite sure how many. Obviously, they're much bigger in the north of England than they are in the south, and a bit in Scotland as well. But the point is, the coverage that Galloway has got has been appalling. So what the broadcasters do to do their nasty, cheating, weaselly stuff is that they say, "We'll have the top seven parties." So that's Labour Tory, Plaid Cymru, SNP, Greens, and Reform. There's one more, I think, somewhere. So that what they do is the cutoff point is Galloway. But the thing is, Galloway is a marvellous speaker. So if he was involved in one of these live TV debates with the other leaders, he would do an absolute destruction of somebody like Sunak or even Starmer. He would bring up all the things you're not supposed to talk about, and he would actually massively increase his vote.
Give me an example. Give me an example of something. Hang on a second.
2002 in New Zealand, where one guy with dreadlocks got onto a TV debate, and it boosted in the election in 2002 something like 10% from virtually nothing, the Green Party vote. Because everyone's watching it and they go, "Oh my God, this guy's really good. I'm going to vote for him." But they won't allow Galloway onto the television, basically. He's not to be seen anywhere, hardly.
At the moment, no. But Galloway has been on television quite a lot, particularly after he was elected recently back to Parliament. And he's had many opportunities.
Yeah, he's an MP. Yeah, Farage's party don't have any MPs.
No, I know that. But what do you think if George Galloway was to be included in the Daily Rundown and he was to be given 6 or 7 minutes here and there, what sort of things do you think he would say that nobody else would say? Because I'm at a loss now.
He'd be talking about Ukraine. He'd be talking about things like Tata Steel. I mean, the Workers' Party is also, by the way, quite good on monetary reform, which nobody wants to talk about. Which is using the Bank of England to basically print money to give to poor people to get the economy moving, because poor people spend it more than rich people do. Rich people tend to hoard their money. You know, these basic things which the Workers' Party's got in its manifesto.
Yeah, but that's
a
nonsense.
Really being talked
that's
about
a nonsense.
Else.
That's a nonsense. I mean, Galloway is another. Galloway has always been out for George Galloway. his primary concern his entire life has been how George Galloway does. I've seen them come and go in nearly 30 years of covering elections. All of these characters, these Pied Pipers, for me, Farage is another one. Do you know what happens, Tony? When they get within a whisker of power, all bets are off and they drop all the promises and all the things they were saying during the campaign.
Well, it has always been the way. Because George is not getting within a whisker of power.
I'm
what
thinking more of Farage
and
Trump.
He's sniping from the sidelines. He's an MP. He was an MP. He'll probably be re-elected. But, you know, what they're doing is they're putting a genuine mixed economy, old Labour platform. And this is really going to undermine Starmer if given a chance.
It could do, yeah.
A lot of votes will come away. And this is the reason why, Richie, you don't hear from Galloway, you do hear from Farage. The media, the mass media, is right wing. It wants all those disgruntled Tories to be voting for reform, not for anybody else. And that's why they plug the Reform Party all the time. But they won't talk about Galloway because they're much more afraid that he can easily undermine the Labour vote.
Do you know this thing,
and
though?
It's very important that people do vote for Labour. I don't think he's out for himself either. He's been very collegiate. He's working very closely with Chris Williamson. He's invited Jeremy Corbyn to join and that sort of thing. He's trying to work. I mean, I know he's got an ego. We all have. But I don't think Galloway is anywhere near as egotistical as you're painting him. I did actually have dinner with him at the end of last year at one of their conferences, and he was a very affable guy to chat with.
He's
open to new ideas.
He's a politician.
That's the key thing for a good leader. He's open to new ideas, Richard.
Here's a question. Why is he talking about quantitative easing and giving money to the poor? And by the way, I'm the only real socialist in the conversation. I don't mean you now. I mean in terms of, I don't mean you at all, in terms of talking about Galloway and stuff. Listen, you don't. You tell everybody working at the Bank of England, listen, you've got till 5 o'clock to leave, and then you burn the place to the ground, and you take control of monetary policy yourselves. You don't just continue with the Bank of England, Tony. You nationalise the banks. That's what you do. And this is the thing, you'll never get them talking about why, about money, how money is created, who has the power to create it, what that means. They don't get into any of this stuff, these politicians. You know,
well,
the real meaty stuff.
In fact, the Workers' Party do. Chris Williamson, I saw talking about it on some podcast just the other day.
Fractional reserve banking, they talk about it.
So they do. They do have this in their DNA, the Workers' Party. And these sorts of things are threatening to the media because they show the media up for lying to us. And they're also threatening to the main political parties. This is why all the focus is on Farage and everything that he's saying,
you might be
for example,
right
to do
you might
to
be
do
right
with
there.
Ukraine, you know, war being started by the by the EU and by, well, he didn't say NATO, did he? He said by the EU, which, by the way, is exactly what Boris said back in 2016.
That's
exactly
right.
The same thing.
Word for word. Here's before we run out of time, let's go back to Julian Assange, because a number of listeners share your appreciation of the man. But some of them are saying, what does Tony reckon about Assange's historic stance on the September the 11th attacks? That's something which has confused a lot of people. Thanks, says Baird. Please put this to Tony. Tony, if memory serves, has Assange gone on the record in the past to say that it's just a conspiracy theory? Is that what people are referring to? He's not been interested in 9/11, no?
I was one of the webmasters and one of the main people involved in the UK 9/11 truth campaign back from about 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2010, during that time. And I'm quite happy to talk about 9/11. I know that not a lot of people understood it, and there was a lot of disinformation put out. There were also deliberate trolls out there who were posing as 9/11 truthers, going for people like Robert Fisk and others to try and, basically attacking them. Noam Chomsky was another one who was literally, verbally, physically,
yeah,
but threatened and stuff by people pretending to be 9/11 truthers. And so a lot of people, I'm not saying that they haven't changed their mind. They might do. Chomsky was, Chomsky and maybe Assange is similar, that they wouldn't speak out about it. But then that's absolutely fine. As far as I'm concerned, so long as they're not trying to just go along 100% with the narrative of the war on terror, which was supposed to be the result of 9/11, which Julian Assange clearly wasn't into. I'm not such a purist that I want everyone to agree with me and also to be very outspoken on all the issues I'm outspoken on. That doesn't, to me, float my boat at all. quite happy for other journalists, other editors, other, you know, people out there, whoever they are, MPs, etc., to say, well, look, I just can't go there for now, you know, and maybe go there at some point in the future. Because it takes all sorts in order to move society along slowly. You know, we've got this thing, the Overton window, where some people just are not prepared to say things, even if they think them in their mind. They don't want to, you know, they're going to lose their career, lose their credibility, be attacked or whatever, and they might decide they don't want to be. So I'm not going to criticize or condemn him in any way if he hasn't really spoken out about the nitty-gritty details of the September the 11th attacks, which we know, if anyone wants to look it up, it's called 9/11 Israel Did It All, the Proof in the World, which is on Wikispooks, which is a terrific article all about how the Israelis were largely behind the September the 11th attacks and certainly worked within the deep state in the US in order to give the Americans the opportunity to go and basically stamp their boot around the Middle East as part of the Israeli Yinon plan to balkanize the Middle East and create mayhem in the Holy Land, which they're now carrying on doing, obviously, in Gaza.
And this beautifully illustrates the point you made 2 minutes ago. I don't agree with that at all. I don't agree that Israel did it, and it isn't because I'm under the boot of the Israeli government. It's just something, a theory I don't go along with. Listen, we've got about 90 seconds left. I want to thank you for your time today, buddy. I asked you on short notice. Tony's written some brilliant books. The Traitors of Arnhem becomes more and more relevant every day that goes by. I can't recommend it highly enough. Check it out. Thisweek.org.uk, Bilderberg.org.
Yeah, it's the main thing with that is it's the Fourth Reich. That's what we're dealing with now. An evil Nazi financial empire where anything that starts to thrive, which is whether it's press, media, campaigning, whatever, is destroyed financially, and another kind of fake financial version of it run by them pops up in its place. So we might even see another WikiLeaks pop up, which is not run by Julian and his friends, which pretends to, you know, this is what I wondered when I saw Bellingcat. You know, this guy appears, but actually he's taking and working very closely with NATO and the Atlantic Council and people like that, but he's pretending to be a sort of Julian Assange type character. So this is what they do. They mimic the genuine article after destroying it. And it's a financial system, but its motives and its end are war, I believe, the Third World War, Albert Pike's Third World War, which is in The Traitors of Arnhem. I put a bit about that in there, which was devised in the 1880s in order to, first of all, sweep the Ottoman Empire out of Palestine, then replace them with a Zionist state, and then to create the most horrendous war the world has ever seen in the Middle East between Zionists and the surrounding Muslim countries, the end result being absolute cataclysm, which the idea is these people love chaos. That's what they're really into, chaos, in accelerationism, chaos everywhere. And the idea being to create such a horrific fake religious war that everyone has had it with the monotheistic religion's faith and loses faith in God completely. So that's their aim, I think. It's a war on God, but they're going to lose. They're quite obviously going to lose in all this. There are a lot of people going to die in the process.
I love your optimism. I hope you're right. I do agree the time is running out.
They will lose, yeah.
Thanks, Tony. Great to have you back on thisweek.org.uk. Tony is on air this coming Friday at 5 p.m. It's an unmissable radio show, so check it out if you haven't, in the unlikely event you haven't heard it. Thanks again for today, pal. Speak
Cheers,
real
Richie.
Soon.
Thanks ever so much for asking me on such an important day. Cheers.
Yeah, brilliant, mate. Thank you, Tony.